If I want to be treated fairly, whoever and whatever I am, spiritual and other ethical traditions counsel me to be fair to others. By implication, those traditions also counsel me to work for fairness for others. As a woman, I have run across sexism a time or two in my life. In condescending attitudes, stupid jokes, and disrespectful treatment by groups of men in public places. Nobody in this room, I'm sure. I want to be treated as an equal with men, and I have appreciated the many women and men who have taken on the issue, which I could not take on alone, could only contribute to. Appreciating that fairness in my life has been furthered by brave feminists from many eras and all genders, I have a spiritual responsibility both to treat others with scrupulous fairness and to work for fairness for others who can't do it alone. That's the foundation of social justice. Our Unitarian Universalist principles also keep us pointed in the golden rule direction, the worth and dignity of every person. We believe it for ourselves and for others. We safeguard it by treating others as worthy and by addressing systems and practices that diminish human worth. We believe with Black Elk that we are one, that we are part of an interdependent web, and if that is so, what is done to the least of us is done to us. We also talk about justice, equity, compassion, acceptance, world community, peace, liberty, freedom. Our underlying principles call us to golden rule behavior, to live toward justice and love. In addition, I believe that all of us have inside of us, more or less acknowledged, the need to be of use to the rest of the world. I was talking to a woman last week who facilitates community service projects for classes at Boise State University. And she says that students usually resist having to do a community project for a class. But they are enthusiastic about such service by the end of the semester. And something like 40% declare that they will continue their work. She and others in her field are devoted toward encouraging students of all ages toward golden rule behavior, starting where they are, using a little external motivation sometimes, like to pass the class, you got to do it, and hoping that the spark of working for community will be fanned. My part in the sermon this morning is mostly to remind us that being religious, or being spiritual, if you will, must involve our hearts reaching out in some way to other hearts. And as you listen to our church member, Louise Jacobson, who has taken the brave step of speaking of her own personal life this morning, as you listen to Louise, reflect honestly on where you are in this journey. As you hear her personal take on human responsibility toward others, let your being think without judgment about how you practice the golden rule in ways small and large.
Committee. We work to make BOOF an inclusive and welcoming place for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people and their families. We also work with the LGBT community in the pursuit of equal rights. This morning, I'm going to share a little about how I developed a personal theology that has social justice at its center. And I'm going to start with a quick astrology lesson. I was born on October 13th, so I'm a Libra. The symbol for Libra is scales. When I picture these scales, I often see an image of Justice, her eyes blindfolded, holding her scales. Because for as long as I can remember, and one important aspect of balance for me has been fairness, another word for justice. And Libra is all about balance. I am fascinated by astrology, not because I believe it foretells our lives, but because I have found that it accurately reflects my life. Perhaps it is a manifestation of the oneness of the universe. My birth chart has four planets in Libra, including Venus, which tells us where both our heart and our values lie, and Neptune, the planet responsible for spirituality and the search for the ideal. What that means is that I am hardwired for justice. However, while astrology indicates where our natural inclinations lie, how it unfolds is yet to be determined. Although I am agnostic, and if pressed to classify myself, would label myself a humanist, the story of the Good Samaritan has a special place in my heart. Physically courageous is a term I would never use to describe myself. Just ask my husband how timid I am about crossing a stream when we're hiking. However, while preparing these remarks, I remembered an incident from grade school that I had not thought about for decades. I grew up in a rural setting and walked the proverbial mile to school. One day when I was in third or fourth grade, I was walking home with two friends when we saw an older boy mercilessly bullying a much younger kid. I was stricken by the little boy's plight. There was no one else around, and he was completely helpless. My friends wanted to just keep going, but I could not bear it. To their complete consternation, I crossed the road, walked up to the bully, and said something like, "Why don't you pick on someone your own size?" He paused, looking startled, spat in my face, told me to mind my own business, and took off. I stood there for a few seconds, shaking, wiped my face off, asked the little boy if he was okay, and could he make it home all right, then rejoined my friends and continued the walk home. I couldn't quite believe what had happened, and was terribly relieved that I had not become his next victim. And I never told anyone about it. It just seemed like my only option at the moment. Although I was baptized in the Congregational Church, I was reared from the age of four by gung-ho Mormon converts in a small Midwestern city, deep in what is commonly referred to as the mission field, the Mormon equivalent of the wild frontier. In fact, I was the only Mormon in my high school graduating class. My father was not only an authoritarian, letter-of-the-law kind of parent, he was also my bishop, head of the local Mormon church, most of the time I was growing up, so resistance was futile. It wouldn't have been an issue, since I sincerely wanted to be good, if measuring up to all the expectations hadn't seemed so daunting, and my parents hadn't consistently communicated to me that they found me lacking. Although the church's teachings were complex and comprehensive, they were devoid of anything about outreach or social justice. And my upbringing was extremely sheltered, as my parents eliminated as many worldly influences as possible. I remained an active, practicing Mormon until my late 20s, when, driven by deep unhappiness, I began a process of self-examination and self-discovery using the principles of cognitive therapy. Because Mormonism is so all-encompassing, this process focused largely on my relationship with the church and my belief system. The best description I can offer is that it was like pruning a parasitic vine out of a large tree with a pair of scissors, one twig, one branch at a time. 3 years into this process, I left the church with a feeling of liberation and no animosity. Shortly after my exodus from the church, my marriage ended, and with it, more than a decade of full-time motherhood. It was time to enter the workforce. Over the next decade, as I developed a career in corporate communication and broadened my worldview, I developed my personal theology, although I wouldn't have called it that at the time. In a nutshell, these are the conclusions I reached. I don't believe it's possible to really understand the nature of God, if there is one, or whether there is life after death, or what form it may take. If dying is like drifting into a dreamless sleep and never waking up, that strikes me as more natural than scary. In any case, it is what it is, and I will find out when the time comes. Meanwhile, assuming there is no life after this one, what I do here becomes more important, not less, because it means that the only thing that will survive me is my effect on other people, my personal contribution to the evolution of the human race. In 1995, I was director of the communication department at the Natural Gas Utility in Salt Lake City, a job I adored with a wonderful staff, when a project came along that really set me on fire. What I didn't know was that my next confrontation with the bully was imminent. The utility's president had survived a heart attack and was inspired to make the company a premier workplace by empowering employees to take an active role in making the company the very best it could be. I was very involved in the development and communication of this continuous improvement program. The problem was that Steve, the vice president in charge of operations, and the majority of the employees, was not on board. Nick, the president, swore he would not let anything, even Steve, stand in the way of realizing this goal. A consultant we were working with told me that if Nick backed down, we would not just go back to where we were when we started. We would be worse off, which was exactly what I feared. In the end, Steve prevailed, and the program turned into a sham, an exercise in meaningless busy work. I was left with a terrible dilemma. I had been the author of everything promoting this program, articles in the employee publications, Nick's speeches, and very visible in the entire process. And I was expected to go on promoting it, being the president's spokesperson, when I knew the program was now a fraud, a hollow shell of the evolutionary opportunity that had been promised to our employees. I wouldn't do it. After 13 years with the company, I gave up my beloved job to keep my integrity intact. And many of the employees knew why I left. They also knew what had become of the promises. Morale went through the floor, and for many, it never recovered. Unfortunately, I was more than disillusioned. I was heartbroken and emotionally, physically, and mentally burned out. What I did not know, and would not find out for 7 years, was that I was also struggling with undiagnosed bipolar disorder that had been exacerbated by the stress of my job. My life slipped into a long, dark night of the soul. Even after my diagnosis, it took several years to get on an effective medication and learn the lifestyle necessities that keep me consistently stable. I also had to learn to understand my brain and trust my mind again. 2 years ago this month, John and I started coming to Boof, and I knew I was home. It was the first time since leaving the Mormon Church that I found a spiritual community that really fit. Within weeks of walking through the door, Roger Sherman mentioned to me that Boof needed a chair for the Welcoming Congregation Committee. It is a good fit for me, since LGBT rights is a cause that I feel strongly about. And after years of worrying about who I could safely tell about my bipolar disorder, my recent decision to come out of the closet has been liberating, and a process that helps me relate to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people who deal with similar issues. I also have found that since I have been actively engaged in this social justice work, which is a necessary expression of my core self, that some of the old lessons from my childhood religious upbringing, like the story of the Good Samaritan, have been slipping back into my mind like old friends who have found their way home. While I remain an agnostic humanist, I can hear those teachings of Jesus, like the Golden Rule, and his encouragement to care for those who are disadvantaged or persecuted without feeling threatened. These teachings also appear in our Unitarian Universalist principles. They are universal. They are important. They make us human.